The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by Fulfill.io, the ERP built natively for e-commerce sellers. Fulfill streamlines the complexity in your business to save you time and money. From smart order routing to warehouse management, accounting to inventory tracking, they take all of your complexity and all the things that take a lot of time and manual effort and streamline them under one unified tool. Their clients range from seven-figure brands all the way through companies doing hundreds of millions of dollars per year so they can grow and scale with you. And they're the highest rated ERP in our community of private sellers, according to member reviews, scoring higher than Odoo, Skubana, Brightpearl, and yes, even NetSuite. Actually scored quite a bit higher than NetSuite. So if you want to streamline the complexity in your business, check them out at ecommercefuel.com/fulfill. The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by OneClick Upsell, the largest and most popular upsell app in the Shopify marketplace, trusted by over 11,000 users, over 1,900 Shopify Plus stores. Man, it is hard to get people to your store these days, whether you're doing organic or whether you're trying to get down in the muck that is Facebook ads these days with the disaster that that has become. You want to take advantage when people actually show up. And if you give people a chance, one in six will spend more money with you if you send them a personalized, targeted, relevant upsell offer, which is what one-click upsell makes super easy to do. You can do it pre-purchase, post-purchase, give them lots of different options. It makes it incredibly easy, and they've helped store owners generate over $200 million in additional revenue. So if you want a slice of that, and you want to get started, you can get started really quickly with them in just a few minutes, get your first upsell up and running, check them out at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. Hey, it's Andrew, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, a show dedicated to helping seven and eight-figure e-commerce brands build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, I'm joined by Ron Shaw, who is the co-founder and CEO of MyAvvi. Super impressive story and business as we're going to get into today. He and his team and his co-founder have built this to be over 30 million in size. Really interesting in the protein powder for women space. And Ron, I think I came upon you just on Twitter as many of my e-commerce stalking stories begin. And just it's super cool how you've built the business. I'm excited to dive in to your team, to how you're doing fulfillment, to marketing. You use like an outsourced CFO, how you finance growth so quickly. You're really big in subscriptions and community and a lot of stuff I like to geek out on. So yeah, man, thanks for coming on and diving deep. I'm excited to go into this.
Andrew, it's an absolute pleasure. Big listener of the podcast, and so honored to be on here. And again, thank you for what you do for founders and the greater community in the e-commerce space. It's an honor to be on here. So excited to jump in.
And you gave me what was very exciting to me, rarely happens, and I hope you don't regret, which is like this this permission slip before we start recording saying, hey man, I'm an open book, we build in public, nothing is out of bounds, and like that is such a rare thing. So I'm going to probably take you up on that and excited to. So thank you. So let's start with Avvi. For people who don't know, it's, you know, when I saw you kind of some on the high level things a little bit, I was like, okay, they do protein powder. And so I went to your website doing some a little bit of research before this. And I was expecting to see like, you know, huge dudes lifting weights and like bench pressing and like, you know, guys crawling through the mud with bulging muscles. And it, because that's what you think when you think protein powder, right? You think like meatheads and people that work out a lot with, you know.
That's right.
Yeah. But it's, you guys do it. That's not what you do. Can you describe what the type of protein powder and who your target customer is?
Absolutely. So we focus on females between the ages of 35 to 50. With a focus around beauty and anti-aging. Our protein, which stems from collagen, which is different from whey protein. Whey protein is a lot more of what you described, bodybuilding, muscle building. Collagen protein actually works with your hair, skin, nails, and joints. So it's a lot more of beauty from within, and just helps with the sourcing of growing better hair, stronger nails, and, you know, even stronger joints. And overall, a lot of elements that roll up to beauty. So our collagen protein comes in multiple different forms, and capsule powders, which come in 25 different flavors. And then we also expanded, you know, as we grew over these 3.5 years, we expanded into more health and wellness products as, you know, subsequent offerings to your collagen needs. So if somebody is already involved in, you know, taking care of themselves, well, here, why don't you also try our multivitamin why don't you also try our pre-workout? You know, just trying to get them deeper and deeper into the lifestyle of health and wellness. So, but we started off in our form, like, you know, mainly known for our beauty and anti-aging collagen protein.
And is it, again, man, I'm so glad you gave me the carte blanche at the beginning. I'm going to take advantage of it. When you're a guy selling into a female market, it seems like one, you know, you've got to work harder to understand your target customer because you're not them by definition. And I've seen like, obviously it's gone incredibly well for you, but it seems also fraught with problems or potential issues. Like I've known people that have gone into a female market and they were kind of looking at it very opportunistically, which isn't a bad thing. That's how I started businesses too. But they kind of got raked over the coals because they weren't the target audience and people felt like they were doing it just purely based out of profit. And it was a bad look. But also being like the face of the brand, right? It's harder for you and your co-founder, who's also a male, to be able to do that. So how challenging has that been? Like, are you front and forward on the branding? I'm guessing not. Like, does that cause problems? Talk about that dynamic a little bit.
You know, I'm going to add an extra layer to this. We're not just males selling to females. We're three South Asian males selling to predominantly Caucasian women, which is our target demo. And I think where this becomes tricky is, what are people going to say, right? That it's like that's that same mindset that, you know, even our parents sometimes grew us up with, which is, what will people say if they find out about this, right? And I think from our angle, our goal has always been being super public. And so tying back to even you know, the kick this off, which was just being super open about who we are, why we're doing this, and then taking that and actually putting it out there. I think from day one, whether it was building our community or being in our founder emails or welcome series or being these people that were like, hey, we are not perfect. And what we're building here isn't perfect yet. And we're selling to not perfect people. So let's all work on Obvi together and make it the obvious choice. And I think when we leaned into that core messaging, we ourselves started to feel very comfortable because we were making other people feel comfortable around it. And I think the positive side of taking an approach where you're literally on the opposite spectrum to whom you're selling, I think the cool part about that is the advantage that we have is we have zero assumptions, right? I am not a 40-year-old woman that's going to assume I know what problems another 40-year-old woman is facing. So what it makes us do, it makes us ask a lot of questions. It makes us actually communicate with our customer. Because I think we're very, very good about at least saying, hey, I have no idea what women go through in this time of sector. So I'm going to ask. And I think that's been a huge advantage to us. So, you know, picking that we're going to be public and then leaning into that. And then secondly, actually realizing that we don't know what the heck we're doing here. And we're going to ask and build the company together with our customers. I think just two things that solved the issue that there are three South Asian males, all sub 30-year-olds that are trying to build a collagen brand here.
I'd love to hear your thoughts on marketing, how you built the business, and kind of maybe in a couple of phases. How did you build the business from zero to, let's say, you know, where it was at the beginning of this year? So what was your bread and butter for building the foundation? And maybe more relevant right now, like, how are you continuing to power growth right now? Because a lot's changed in the last 12 months.
Yeah, I think it's actually been two totally different businesses. Last year, I mean, there's so many different ways to describe it. I think what I'll start off with is last year, we were a company that was focused on CAC to AOV, right? If the unit economics look good there, we can scale and we're good to go. By the beginning of this year, that model was thrown out the door because of being post-iOS and really starting to, you know, see the economy changing, seeing so many different macro effects. Like, I always tell this, talk about this to people. It's like, we're building a business in a time which is post-pandemic, post-inflation, pre-recession, quote unquote, and then, you know, post-pandemic. It's like, it is the, like, if you think about it, mentally, one of the hardest times to build a business in the history of business. Right. It's not just like, hey, it's like a Great Depression because there's one element that is rocking everything. We have multiple elements that are rocking people differently. So when the year started this year, it became a model of CAC to LTV, which for us is focusing on if we bring a customer in, how can we keep this customer? Because we're paying more for this customer, one, and two, we can't afford to lose money on this customer. And so it's like, what can we do to educate further? So we went deeper in our product education. What can we do to provide more products that people want? So we went deeper and deeper into customer feedback, which I think was already, you know, ingrained in us. And then lastly, I think fundamentally, we stopped looking at everything being just, what's our acquisition cost today? What's our acquisition cost today? And more of like, okay, what type of consumer did we, what kind of customers did we acquire today? What did they buy? Okay, here's the projected LTV on what they bought because of based on different cohorts. Okay, did we gain quality today? And quality has been like the word of the year, not so much scale or any of that. It's, are we gaining quality customers? Because that will shape us for next year. So sorry, long-winded answer, but definitely an important piece for us.
How do you get customer feedback well? I mean, there's a million ways you could do this through surveys, through your community. What if you found is the best way to really kind of tap into, you know, the needs, wants, desires, problems of your customer base?
Yeah, I think there's two things. One is you need to first recognize who are the best customers to get feedback from, right? And the answer is actually, and typically where we typically get a lot of the answers from for other brands and what I've seen from other brands is middle of the pack, right? People who are like 1 to 2 orders, come in and out and don't really understand the brand or whatever it may be. Where I believe the best places to get an answer is actually the opposite spectrum. So we take our top customers who are mainly in our community, and we literally ask them in the community. Like even today, if you go to our community today, we have a negative poll up there that says, which of the Obvi products are you having the most trouble with taking, right? And can you click on the poll of which one it is and write in the comments why you're having trouble with it, right? So we're using a negative poll to generate positive feedback on how to help people. So community for our top customers, loyalists, and really being able to be super, super apparent with them and giving them a place to be super vocal has been great. On the other spectrum, I think you can learn even more than from your loyalists. You can learn from the people who are on the verge of being churned out or have churned out. It's a tougher way to reach to them because you're like, you got to email them, you got to SMS them, you got to incentivize them. But when you can figure out why this person bought once and never came back, you really realize different things about your brand that just is not being covered. And I think for us, we put equal weight on knowing the best parts and the worst parts from our loyalists and the worst parts from the people who just haven't interacted with our brand after one purchase. And it's mainly on that side, it's through surveys and through emails and SMS, but really, really sectored out to say, hey, we're literally begging you for this information and it will change someone else's life if you can help us with this.
Apologies for interrupting, but how do you, I feel like getting constructive, and when I can, I feel like constructive is just a euphemism for negative feedback, right? Like it's very helpful, but it's negative feedback. When I think about people that care the most about me and I care the most about, like asking for giving them negative feedback is still really hard, right? Like I think about good business friends when we have talks, we both talk pretty candidly. Even then, like if I want raw feedback from them, I have to be like, hey, can you give me, like, seriously, don't hold back, give it to me raw. This is helpful. Yep. And this is from someone who I have a 5 to 7+ year relationship with that cares deeply about me, right? And so it still takes work. So a stranger who doesn't have a vested interest in a relationship or a very light one, like how do you actually get them to give you candid feedback in a meaningful and in-depth enough way where it's useful? I've done this with the community, and a lot of times, like if people leave the ECF community, same thing. I'd love to know like why they're leaving, but it's pretty rare that people are, because they have to bridge for them. There's an uncomfortable, like there's a social and an uncomfortable cost. Even if you don't harm them for it, they still feel it. So how do you get that?
So I think we lead out with about probably like 4 verticals in how to get this. So our community is super public, right? And like the people who are going to talk there are also the people who don't really have zero regard to being worried about saying something that's wrong or being, you know, attacked by others who may not agree. These people are your most vocal, right? And I think with them, they'll get the ability to like just be able to share it. And typically it's a snowball effect. So if they see a few people share, mm-hmm. now bang, now you're going to see those people come in. So that's one vertical. I think then you take what we do, which is with email, right? Where email, it's more of like, hey, just a text email direct from the founder. We see that you haven't bought again. And all, if you had to give me one reason why, right? Just make it super simple, nothing else here. Asking them for very little time is very important to lead out with this. Now, what we often all do is like, can you do this survey? And like, yes, selfishly speaking, it's the most amount of information we can get. But the person who just doesn't care about your brand is not going to care to do a survey, totally. Right? And then third thing is we'll do like an SMS where we list out the most common reasons someone doesn't come back and buy. And we say, can you respond with the number that allocates to why you agree? So like reason number one, price is too high. Reason number two, product didn't work, whatever it may be. And we just say, can you respond with one, two, or three? So again, super easy. And then the fourth vertical is going super anonymous, right? Which is we've created this anonymous survey and you can leave us any feedback, your name or your order. None of the details will be shared. This is just for us to be able to understand. And believe it or not, the anonymous piece is so much more important for people mm-hmm. than it's talked about there. You know, usually people are just like, oh, well, you have to throw them a $500 gift certificate. And sure, maybe you can incentivize an open for that, right? An open the email type of thing. But at the end of the day, the reason someone doesn't click or doesn't want to fill it out sometimes has a lot to do with like being anonymous. So I think those are the main four verticals of what we've focused on like, how do we get these people to feel comfortable without trying to expect the world out of people who don't care?
Let's go back. So you guys, how big are you in terms of revenue right now? And maybe margins as well, if you're open to talking about those.
Yeah, absolutely. So we till date have done about $45 million in revenue in these 3.5 years. And this year alone, we'll do about $20 million. Last year, we did about 18.5. And the year before that, we did about 5. And the year before that, it was like $100,000. And that's when we had started. And margin-wise, you know, on a gross margin profile, we're at 76%. So for us, you know, supplements, you know, pills pay your bills, you know, type of game. It's a great margin game to play. But I think it's become a worse game to play, as you already know, over the last 18 months.
Yeah. And so grown to, you know, 20 million this year, how, when you started it, give us a little sense on how you financed it. Because one thing you mentioned too, maybe we can segue from financing into team, mentioned you have an amazing team, like B2B sales rep, video editors, web developers, CX person, and all high level people too. It sounds like a ton of money for how young you are with bootstrapping. So have you bootstrapped the whole way? Have you just been the margins and the you've done a well good enough job where you can just reinvest back in the business? Or how are you? It is. Okay.
Yeah. So we bootstrapped the whole way up until September of this year. September of this year, I started an AngelList round through AngelList. A seed round through AngelList. And the goal there was, we want to explore retail next year because we have some really, really good opportunities and we wanted to be ready to deploy capital. And so we ended up raising just through Twitter and LinkedIn, through referrals and like people who wanted to get involved. We ended up raising $2.2 million. We haven't drawn down on it yet because the round just closed a month ago and we don't need the capital, but it's like, it's there ready to go so we can start exploring some bigger ticket items, such as being a creator brand next year and retail. But till this point, because we haven't closed that part of the round or drawn on the money, we are still bootstrapped and have been bootstrapped on a $10,000 investment.
That's amazing. That's what I was going to ask. So 10K to build everything. Did you have to convert into a C Corp to be able to qualify for that AngelList round?
I did. To close the round, you had to turn to C Corp. Until then, we were an LLC.
Got it. How do you think about that? Because I've like in the last couple of years gotten a little bit more of a crash course in that. And the LLC is probably more advantageous on a tax basis. You don't have the double taxation, but from an investor standpoint, it's much harder. And also, if you ever sell the business, it's really nice to have an LLC as well from a tax perspective. I think I'm getting that right. Hopefully, I'm talking on the fly.
You are right.
Yeah. So how did you, was that a tough call to make I guess it's if you need the money, you got to do it. But I guess maybe a better question is, how hard of a decision was that? And are there any silver linings that come along with it?
I'm maybe missing some, but there's almost no silver linings. There's literally no reason to do it unless you have it, in my opinion, or if you have an extremely, extremely strong corp tax background to understand how you're going to engineer your business through tax and financial planning. Those are the only reasons I would even be like, hey, yeah, let's go do this, right? And then I think for us, the only other kind of like bummer point was like, we decided to raise this capital and then it raised a lot more than we were going to go just raise 250K just to like have there ready to go, ended up raising a lot more. And now it's sitting there and it's like, we're not drawing on it. And it's like, it's just there. And so now I had to turn into a C Corp to close the round. And I didn't really need to do it because I'm not drawing on the money yet because our plans for retail is getting pushed out 3 to 6 more months. So it's like a lot of the things I did was probably poor timed. And now I'm like, here I am, MyOBV Inc. And I have to deal with it.
Yeah, man. Angelus, was that a pretty straightforward process to go through everything?
Oh my God, yeah.
Because I've raised money with a company called Assure, and who I've used to structure a couple of deals. And so when they emailed everyone kind of saying they were kind of closing up shop and going under this last month, it wasn't a shocker to me, but it was a very complex process with wasn't streamlined. Anyway, and then I had somebody who raised money, I think it was, I did an investment and in a small startup and through AngelList. And I didn't. I was like, holy, that's it? Like, that's all I have to do? That was like 2 minutes. It blew me away.
It is. It blew me away too, to the point where I'm like, this needs to be talked about more. Because, and since then, I've almost helped like 5 or 6 other founders just kind of like get set up on it. Because it is actually ridiculously easy. And it literally has, I mean, you think about some of the things that been created to make life easier. You think Shopify for e-commerce, right? Or TapCart for creating apps, or the Parker card for really, really good, you know, so really easy tools to make what shouldn't be complicated just easier. I think that's what AngelList has done for seed rounds. And honestly, you can even raise Series A through it. But what I really liked was it took me couple hours to get everything set up. And that's because I had to ask some legal questions about, should I do safe versus equity or this or that? Just little nuances. But you're filling out seven different questions. And from there, you get invite links for people to invest. And it's like, that's it. And you're ready to go, right? And then it's super nominal fee, you know, 8 to 10K total cost, fixed cost, no matter how much you raise. So when you look at all these pieces, for you to go, if you have a network or can tap into a network, I think it's a phenomenal way to go about it.
Hey, Andrew here with a little aside. If you're listening, you're obviously interested in e-commerce. And so I want to make sure you know about our private community for 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brands at e-commerce fuel. And the secret sauce, like you might guess, is it's limited to people who own stores, who are in the trenches, practitioners doing this stuff. It's a very curated community, which has 3 big benefits. First, it means everyone inside can help get fast, on-point answers to your most important questions. If you're trying to decide if SMS is a tool worth rolling out, if you just got suspended on Amazon, if you're trying to hire a director of e-commerce, these are all things that either people have experience with or have gone through in the forums. And if you post and ask questions, you'll get answers within hours, sometimes even minutes, as well as being able to tap into close to a decade of archive discussions. So you get a lot of insights, fast answers to pressing questions. You get to plug into an amazing network of over 1,100 experienced e-commerce entrepreneurs. So you can reach out to people. If you're in e-commerce fuel, our members are incredibly giving and generous. And so if you want to reach out to someone with expertise, oftentimes we'd be happy to share what they know. If you're, you know, traveling, hopefully when traveling is a common thing again, a lot of our members would hit in the city, you know, DC, Dallas, Sydney, Australia, you know, London, wherever it is, and be able to have someone on the ground you can connect with or maybe grab a beer with. It's an amazing network. And then finally, we've got a huge user-generated review library with over 10,000 reviews on agencies, software, e-commerce software that you can tap into to avoid costly hiring and software mistakes. Nothing is worse than spending 3 months with an agency to onboard only to find out that a bunch of people already tried them and they were horrible and they wasted a bunch of your money and your life. So those are the kind of things you can avoid tapping into the unbiased reviews and experiences of our members with our software directory. So if any of this sounds interesting to you, you should join us. ecommercefuel.com. You can learn more. You can apply for membership there. We also have a 5x ROI guarantee. If you own a 7 or 8 figure brand and your membership fees for our community don't pay for themselves at least 5 times over the course of the first year, we'll refund it completely as well as send you $1,000 just for the wasted time. So ecommercefuel.com, check it out. We'd love to have you apply and potentially join the community. All right, back to the discussion. How are you tracking all that? Like when you, let's say you have a day, you're looking at your orders for the day. How are you analyzing first, like how are you projecting out the projected LTV for customers you're acquiring and then tracking all that? Are you using some attribution, in-house stuff? How you, because that's a lot to manage.
Yeah. So what we have is, and thanks to, we use Triple Whale, what Triple Whale gets us is our baselines. So now that we have some historic data, we're able to say, okay, somebody who buys our Hello Goodbye product, right, which is a kit of two products, that LTV is typically $440. Okay. And that's based on a strong significance of amount of data. So if we see today's orders, 22% of them were Hello Goodbye, right? We're marrying the two cohorts with obviously expected LTV. And that is part manual, part deriving that cohort from Triple Whale, right? We're big spreadsheet guys here. So it's like, even if there are more and more tools that can do this for you, we're probably just going to still opt into, let's throw this in a spreadsheet. And it's not even super complicated. I think a lot of what has happened into e-commerce is just everyone looking at such big picture things because metrics have become a more household language. And what I mean by that is like, we all talk AOV, LTV, CVR, CAC, and CAC, and this, and like all the metrics that, like, again, these weren't around as commonly spoken 4 or 5 years ago. And now it's like, hey, this is kind of how you compare things or look at your business. And what I think we've forgotten in the journey of learning this new language and is that there is deeper cohorts that live in each. Right. And it's like, you can't forget about that. You can't just say, my LTV is this. LTV for what? Is it for this SKU or is it that SKU? And what's the weighted average of amount of orders that's coming from this versus that? And are you looking at, NCAC versus LTV, or are you just looking at CAC versus LTV? And so there's so much drill down data, and it's not complicated data to get. It's just man drilling the hell out of your orders. Right. But yeah, that's kind of how we go about it.
That's cool. So a bunch of orders come in. And so for getting those LTV numbers, are you pulling those? I know, like Klaviyo, for example, give you an estimate of LTV. There's other sources, or maybe Triple Whale.
You're getting it from Triple Whale.
So you get it from Triple Whale. You look at that LTV and be able to either look at it in aggregate, what's the average LTV for today? And then you can also, I'm guessing, look at it by campaigns or sources or where they're coming from. And you're trying to just really... quality is the word of the year. I like. So what do you, you probably have a more qualified given the rigorousness of how deep you go on the data than most people answer this. What's working really well for you guys right now? Is it Facebook? Is it Instagram? Is it TikTok? Is it community? Those totally depends on the ad campaign and what you're doing. Although I imagine the winners you roll out across different channels. What have you guys seen work well for you the past, let's say 3 or 4 months of marketing?
Yeah, I think for us the key lead out has been, and I think will always be for some time, has been Facebook. What we've looked at Facebook as is, if you look at year over year, sure, our CAC has gone up 25%, call it. Okay. And in some, for some product or some top of funnels, maybe even 50%. Okay. What we've learned to do, And I think if we can mentally all get there, I think we'd all be in a better place, is we are not going to change what happened with iOS We're not going to re-engineer how Facebook's built, and we're not going to be able to change data, right? And so instead of trying to fight CAC every day and constantly struggling at like, damn, Facebook is screwed over, or Facebook sucks now. I think for us, what we said is, okay, what's the new CAC, right? It went from 40 to 50. Okay, 50 is a new CAC. We're not going to get it to 40. If it does, great. We're going to be printing money. And if we're not, we're going to figure out 50. Now, how does $50 CAC work here, right? Well, AOV can't be at 60 anymore. AOV needs to be at 70 to 75. Okay, cool. So now we're going to shift fully into CRO, right? We're going to make sure that everything is upsell heaven here, right? Instead of using, you know, rebuy, we're going to build out our own cart. Instead of using, you know, cart hook, we're going to build our own upsells. We're going to do checkout upsells. We're going to do reconvert. We're going to do so many levels so that AOV is going to be at 75. Now we're at 78, right? And so we fought the battle a little bit differently. And I'm going to, you know, get this back to your initial question. So for us, Facebook is still what's working. But if you look at Facebook without all the other efforts we did, it's not working because its CAC is up 25 to 50% year over year, right? We just found a way to make it work. Secondly, I think we've done a really, really strong at just strong job at making sure TikTok becomes our creative house. And what I mean by that is TikTok is the most inconsistent of platforms for us. So we don't expect much out of it. But TikTok, because of how needy it is for content, has given us a really strong discipline around creating content so often that it's fueling all of our other platforms. And then thirdly, I think for us, the biggest piece is, not the biggest, but one of the larger retention efforts is our community. And then taking product launches and SKU expansions and fueling this community with core, you know, the core objective being, hey, we are giving you multiple reasons to come back to Obvi. So that gives us really good buffer to our bottom line. So I think those three have still been our top three focuses. But I wouldn't say that they're performing the best. I don't know if that makes sense. I think we've found a way to make it acceptable.
No, that totally makes sense. I love that answer too, in terms of because maybe you can get a little bit better on the cost side, the CPA side, but it's at some level, it's just a new world you have to come to live to deal with, even if you can moderate it a little bit. Makes probably have much more control on the lever you can push a lot harder, improving all the stuff you mentioned on your side. Right. In terms of long-term value. How you mentioned community, and community people, sometimes people mention community and they use community interchangeably with customers. Sometimes people mention community and they mean, hey, we host 15 events per year for our people in person and we know half of them by name, which is radically different. So like when you say community, do you have an online forum? Do you have just how do you foster community? What does that look like for Obvi?
Our community, we built it on Facebook. So it's a Facebook group. It's a public group. And when we started it, the goal was we need to find out what product we're going to launch next. That was the core reason we launched it, which was let's get all our few customers we had. At that point, we had like 50 or 60 customers. Let's get them in this community. Let's just ask them what they want next, because we were so strapped on cash that anything we launched next, if it failed, the company would be shut down. So we funneled these people in and we just started like asking, we started talking to them like, hey guys, what do you want to see next? Just pick the next collagen flavor, right? So far we've launched fruity cereal and cocoa cereal. What do you want to see next? Started doing surveys, polls, this and that. And the winner that came out was cinnamon cereal, because people love Cinnamon Toast Crunch. So we're like, okay, cool. Went to the manufacturer, got the lowest run, launched it in that community first. And again, it was like 72 people at this time. And we had only gotten, I think it was 210 units total from our MOQ manufacturer, and almost all 70 people bought it. And at this point, we had already covered the cost of that entire run. Everything was cherry on top. We're like, dude, this worked. Like, thank God it worked. Like, not knowing that this can be a strategy. So it worked. And then we're like, okay, cool. Like, let's think about the next thing now, right? And so we're like, then we kind of did what I think a lot of founders sometimes do, is like, they feel like empowered to like now take over all of a sudden. And so we were like, okay, cool. We nailed it. We're on to the next flavor. Let's do another launch, right? We wanted to be the supreme of collagen, which sounds weird, but that's what we're building. So we went back to the board and we're like, all right, what flavor should we do next? And I think we, the three of us, came up with, I forget which flavor it was. I think it was like something really silly, but it was like a frosted cereal. Okay. It was like the vanilla of it. And when we were, you know, thinking about it, and then I think it was one of us, forget which three of us, were like, should we just ask the community again? Right. And at this point it was grown to like 120 people. We asked, and it was like overwhelmingly the response was honey oat cereal, which was like a Cheerios, right? Because everyone loves honey as a taste. And so we're like, oh shit, like imagine we had launched frosted cereal and that got no votes.
Man, these are not the flavors I would ever guess that a woman focused like, protein powder would be. So wow, okay.
Super bizarre, right? So we went and did the honey cereal and again sold out exactly what we needed to cover the cost, and then we kept selling it and we're like, okay, we are no longer going to launch anything without asking this community. These 100 people were like, the golden goose is for us. And then we just kept it going. So last year when we did just about 18 million, we had done 26 product launches. One every 2 weeks, limited drops. They launch at Sunday at midnight. 40 to 50-year-old women are staying up because we create a virtual line to buy collagen at midnight because they know if they don't buy it at midnight, the drop's going to be sold out. We do a lot of artificial sellouts. They buy into it. So what I think we're really proud of from this community that is now, by the way, 60,000 women. It is the second largest collagen community in the world. What we're really proud of is we've created a little bit of hype culture and like that Supreme or Nike drop culture for healthy products, right? You're not staying up for some shoes. You're staying up for something that's going to make you feel better and look better. So I think that's what's been like our construct.
And that takes real discipline though too, because it's the kind of thing where it's super easy to be like, yeah, let's do a little bit more, and keep pressing the line. But the thing that makes it valuable also is a sense of scarcity and fear of missing out. And yeah, do you have to wrestle with that very much in terms of not getting overly greedy and killing the goose that lays the golden egg, so to speak, or is it not as challenging as you might guess?
No, I think what you have to be very, very intentional about is showcasing that you're listening and executing on that. So like, I think a lot of people naturally speaking are like, we listen to our customers or we speak to our customers and like, they don't even know the names of their top 20 customers, right? Like you need to be like, we are like, if you go into the community today, right? Just type in Avi Community on Facebook, you will literally see myself and the founders all over the place there. Like in comments, talking to people, and this is 3.5 years later, right? With 60,000 women. We're in there listening, talking, letting people know like, okay, someone will just recommend, be like, hey, can we get an eggnog flavor next year? I'll be like, okay, here, fill out this form. Let's get this in process. We're going to keep you posted if this is possible, right? Like being almost like, hey, you guys are the mechanics here. You tell us what needs to be fixed. We're going to keep throwing stuff at you, right? And you tell us what you need and we'll get it for you, right? And so that's what we really are. We're not really the operators. We're just the people who are providing the tools that these mechanics need. And that's, I think, the way they see us, which is why this works. It doesn't work, though, if you attempt it, but then still end up doing whatever you please to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Fascinating. I want to ask you about subscriptions, and we're kind of getting a little low on time, but want to do this before we dive into our final lightning round here. How, for something like you have consumable product subscriptions, obviously a massive potential driver if you can keep churn under control, but I also feel like, and somewhat fairly so, subscriptions maybe, or I think maybe the last year or two, a lot of e-commerce marketers saw them as like, oh, this is great. If I can get people on subscription, it's just this panacea. I can deal with all, you know, they can help me kind of deal with some of the rising costs across the board on acquisition, but also some subscription fatigue. And I know personally myself, unless I really use something on a very regular basis, I can't think of a single thing I'm subscribed for in a physical product. There's something weird about our the business brand. Like I'll sign up for a recurring SaaS thing $100. And it's for some reason, it's a different part of the brain. But if I'm like, oh, $20 every 3 months for this physical product, absolutely not. I don't use my chapstick then. Like it's crazy. I don't know why. It's totally logical. Yeah. But that being said, it's still a barrier. So how Are subscriptions, like what percentage of your revenue comes from subscriptions? I think maybe even more importantly, the biggest question and learning that I'd love to hear selfishly and also other people would love to learn is on a churn basis, have you had much luck intentionally getting your churn down? Because man, even if you can get your churn down from even something like 4%, which is dang low, down to something like 2%, which is hyper low, it's the churn can make or break your subscription setup.
Right, right. For us, subscriptions is just around 8% of our business. It's not very, very high. But here's what I will say. I think we've created an artificial subscription process. Okay. So again, apologize, is a weird answer. But what we've done is we've basically asked people to subscribe to the idea that we are going to do so many drops and launches that they themselves, like, you need to like put aside money from your paycheck to be ready for what we're about to put out for you, right? And what we've been is extremely consistent with that, right? Even this year, we've done about 16 launches. And what we've subscribed, at least our community and our, our super users to, is whatever we drop, you gotta get it, right? Like it's a collectible, right? It's like Pokemon cards. You gotta buy the new pack. You gotta buy it, right? And so I think for us, the reason why we didn't focus on the natural subscription way, which is, of course, once you have someone in that chain of events and have them, you know, priced in, it's a great model. And of course, we can make the unit economics work through churn even better. What we did instead was, I think we almost didn't want people to go through a natural subscription model, because our model is we're going to put so much against the wall that if you were subscribed to something, we almost think that would be a negative to our business. Because then you may not be more apt to buying the newest launch. So I think our frequency of launching and creating new products and bringing things to market is so high that a natural subscription model just wouldn't work. I think on the flip side, what we've really done or really focused around is just getting people subscribed to the idea that, hey, listen, anything we drop, we have to launch. So like if you go to our community, a lot of our posts are people showing their cabinets and they literally have 18 to 20 collagens.
And it's like the mini bar of collagens.
It is. It really is. And it's like people compete with like, damn, did you actually get that pound cake drop? Like you're so lucky, I couldn't add to my collection. It became like our subscribers, and I still call them subscribers because they really are subscribed to the idea of collecting. You know, and we have thousands of them. They are like, you know, all of them above $1,000 LTVs, which I believe is a higher LTV that I would get than from a typical subscriber that would churn out even at a really good percentage. And so when you look at these people, I think it really helps to be able to give them the ability to not churn out because they're bored or having to focus on, hey, swap out whenever you're ready, try another flavor. Instead, we're just going to keep bringing it to you. You know it's on Sundays at midnight. You know you're going to have to stay awake. And you know that we're going to sell out in a couple of days. So you have to get it. And it's like become like that cycle. So again, long answer to it. But yeah, it's subscription, the natural course subscription. I think we built a model kind of layered off of that, but something that has a much higher frequency with a less chance of churn because we just don't give them a chance.
Subscriptions via frequent product launches. Love it.
Yes.
Yeah, very cool. Well, Ron, can you talk about the Chew on This podcast that you do, you and your co-founder do? I've caught a few episodes. Super cool. Talk a little bit about it because you guys are getting in the weeds about stuff. And I say that in the best possible way because that's what I like try to do on this podcast as well. But talk about your guys' show. It's super cool.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah, I think for us, Ash and I have like always tried to put as much stuff building up, be publicly out there or commenting on our thoughts or this or that. And it started to become one of those things where it's like, hey, can we, you know, one, first of all, kind of comprise this information and provide it to someone in a more, you know, easier fashion to access. But two, I think what we saw with what's happening with a lot of podcasts, especially with the rise of so many new ones this year, is there is this one piece to it that's like, it's usually two people talking with the guest, or just two people, or just one person with the guest. And what would happen is there would be a lot of the same conversations over the course of 1 hour to 1.5 hour episodes. And it started to become like, what's different from this to this, or that to that? And what's really different is the personality behind it, right? And that's important, and that's great. But content seemed a little bit overlapped. So what we wanted to take the approach of, and that was just our opinion, was what about if things were 30 to 40 minutes long, and it's almost the perfect bridge between a podcast and a masterclass, right? And not to be, you know, not to sound like a pretentious, like we're masters or anything, but the idea of, hey, you would take a course, right? And not all courses are great. So again, not to be pretentious, but the point is what can bridge that, right? Well, what if we did kind of like a pod class, right? Where it's like part podcast, so you still see the personalities here, right? But part of it is you're going to get this digestible tactical takeaways that we hope that you go and test on your business, because we tested it and it either worked or it didn't. And we'd love to hear if you can do that. So you listen to this, and the goal is, the hope is that you walk away and be like, huh, I got to try that. And there's reference points. We did it super ESPN style. So like you can get to exactly the different parts of the episode. And again, just trying to change the way every podcast has kind of been created right now recently, and seeing if we can maybe hopefully go with this concept of pod class and see what it does. So episode one just launched last week. I've been super, super excited and thrilled with the feedback so far.
Very cool. Chew on this podcast. Check it out wherever you get podcasts, Spotify, Apple, etc. And then also Ron's a great follow on Twitter at Obvi. That's O-B as in boy, V as in Victor, I-C-E-O, at Obvi CEO. Give him a follow.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, of course. Ron, you want to do for a quick rapid fire, one sentence to one word, one sentence lightning round here before we wrap her up?
Always.
Okay, cool. How do you describe the e-commerce environment in a couple words right now?
Hardest it's ever been.
What's one of the fondest memories from your childhood?
Going to Disney World and being able to actually ride the ride for my first roller coaster, because I was always rejected.
You always rejected? Oh, because why were you rejected?
Well, we've gone every year, and my first time that I was able to actually ride a ride was up on my fourth time going to Disney World, because again, I was so young. But yeah. So when I got to, every year was just a lead up of, do you think I can ride one of the rides this year? Just remember the first one.
Was it terrifying, amazing, or a little bit of both?
A little bit of both. A little bit of both. I think it was a lot of nervousness, because I was super excited for many years to be able to do this. So just a lot of nerves.
Dude, I got kids. We took them to an amusement park this year for the first time, and all of them went on roller coasters for their first time. Some of them loved it. Some of them, it was probably the scariest thing in their life. And some of them probably should have waited another 3 years before we put them on there. So.
Well, either way, it's an experience, which is you can't replace it.
Yeah. What's your favorite flavor of collagen powder you guys saw?
Cookies and cream.
Cookies and cream. We'll link up to that in the show notes. What's the hardest part of your business?
Cash flow. I think anytime we find scale not being funded makes scale tricky, especially because we have so many SKUs. So 3.5 years into this, it's become trickier to manage.
Man, even still, that's crazy. How much money in the bank is enough? So this is X amount in the bank. It could be money, liquid investments, anything like that. But how much money in investments, if you had that in the bank, you're like, you know, if I made more, it'd be nice. But if I didn't, I'd be okay.
Personally or business?
Personally, this is like in your personal ownership.
10 million in the bank account is enough. And another 5 to 10 million in assets would be enough.
How many hours a week do you work?
Like 50, maybe 45.
Okay. Yeah. Not crazy.
No, not crazy.
What's the number one hobby you have and you can't say work?
Just playing with my newborn. It's like, I don't know if it's a hobby, I guess a responsibility, but like, just like doing everything for him, because it's just like, a lot of people see it like as a task, but like, I just look for, I'm waiting till he wakes up and I'm like waiting to put him down. And like, I'm just every moment with him has just become something new for me. So I think it is still a bit of a hobby, then it's become responsibility. So it's just, it's awesome time spending with him.
That's super cool. How old is he?
He is 5 months.
Oh, dang. Congrats, man. Still early days. And then finally, who's one of the most interesting people you've met, either through ECF, and now you're a fairly newer member. So if someone comes to mind for ECF, great. If not, maybe we can say e-commerce Twitter.
Ooh, that's a good one. I would have to say Alex Fedotov. He's a YouTuber involved in creating like e-com masterminds and does a lot of speaking and stuff. He actually, you know, brought me out to speak at one of my first events too. And what he's doing a lot of is nurturing the community through speaking events, similar to what you're doing with like, you know, the portal and then the podcast and a lot of thought leadership. I think he's doing it through speaking events. And so he's been able to kind of give me the confidence to learn that part of it, because doing things digitally and behind a screen, a lot more different than doing it in person. So it's just been interesting to see that dynamic and being able to learn what it takes to do that.
Alex, what was his last name again?
Fedotov, Fedetoff.
Cool. I'll have to check him out. Well, Ron, super fun, man. This is, I really enjoyed this. Took a lot of notes here as you were talking too. So congrats on what you built. Thanks for sharing everything and being so open, such the open book policy. You didn't disappoint. Again, chew on this podcast. Make sure to check it out. Make sure to grab some super high quality collagen powder if that's your jam over at myobvi.com. So Ron, thanks so much. This is a really good time. Appreciate you coming on.
Absolute pleasure. And again, absolute honor to be on. So thank you for, again, didn't even realize an hour passed by. So thank you for that.
Given you've made it to the end of the episode, there's a pretty good chance you're fairly serious about this e-commerce stuff, which is why you should check out the E-Commerce Fuel community. It's a vetted, vibrant community for 7- and 8-figure brand owners. And joining gives you access to a lively discussion forum for experienced founders sharing insights and getting help, access to our library of over 20,000 member reviews on everything from agencies to tech to lawyers to all the things that, you know, founders are making hiring decisions or purchasing decisions on to run their business, and invites to member events throughout the year. So if that sounds interesting, you can apply for membership and learn more at ecommercefuel.com. Big thanks to one-click upsell from Zipify Apps. Rapidly increase your AOV by offering targeted high-converting upsells. You can get started with them at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. And also to Fulfill.io, an ERP designed specifically to streamline complex e-commerce businesses and the highest rated ERP among our community members. Learn more at ecommercefuel.com/fulfill. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard, adventure often, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
This is the ASY Radio Network live from New York.